97% of salespeople are missing this one thing that if they only knew it, would allow them to close 75% more sales. It has nothing to do with charisma, the gift of gab, or whatever else you've been told. Because if you're trying to convince your customer, that means they don't want to buy, which means you've already lost the sale. What sales professionals do is sell customers exactly what they want to buy. They work with the customer to uncover their current challenges, the consequences of those challenges, and how that's impacting them. They then help the prospect describe the ideal solution to their problems, what that looks like, and how that perfect outcome will impact them. And once they can picture that perfect outcome, price is irrelevant. That's right. Sales professionals sell customers exactly what they want to buy because it's easier dealing with a happy customer than dealing with a customer who felt sold. So here's the deal. I explain everything in my live two-day sales workshop, June 14th and 15th, in my office. Go to closemoresales.com/workshop and you'll be able to close more sales as soon as you get back. Hey, everybody. Thank you for joining us for today's episode of Real Estate Disruptors. Today, we got Danny Perkinson with Perkinson Properties, and he's here to share how he's sold close to $1 billion in real estate, and that's billions with a B, in case you guys didn't hear that correctly. If this is your first time tuning in, I'm Steve Trang, broker, owner of Stunning Homes Realty, founder of the Offer Fast Homes app, and the only app you need for wholesaling. And I'm on a mission to create 100 millionaires, so please private message me if you guys need any help with your business. A couple of you guys reached out to me last week. I appreciate that. And if you're excited for today's show, please give me a wave, give me a thumbs up. And as a reminder, I don't charge a dime for this show. I don't make any money doing this, so here's all I ask. If you get value today, please tell a friend. Either share this episode now, tag a friend below, or tell them your best takeaway later on. That way we can all grow together. And don't forget, this is a live show, so please post your questions for Danny to answer. I think he's touched on all different facets of the real estate industry, so he's a wealth of knowledge. So we're very fortunate to have him today. So first question, what got you into real estate?
Oh, man, it's a good one. What got me into real estate is being eyeballs deep in construction.
Yeah?
Yeah. Yeah, my background's in construction management, graduated with that degree back in 2008, and was doing a lot of construction, remodeling, and decided I would way rather do something besides construction.
You learned about construction.
I learned.
In 2008.
In 2008. Great times. Right at the downturn. So it was kind of a survival tactic for me at that time. I had a construction company, and then I also got my real estate license to kind of pay the bills mm-hmm. in the downturn. And then eventually learned that I just enjoyed the real estate aspect of it more so than the construction aspect. So
yeah.
I still really like and do construction and enjoy it, but I prefer the real estate brokerage aspect more.
Yeah.
So that's okay. What got me into it.
And what were some of your early struggles when you got into the business?
My early struggles were, I really didn't have a mentor of sorts. I kind of had to learn everything on the fly. Perkinson Properties was really just me, and I had an uncle who was at that time the broker, but wasn't super active and involved, so I had to learn a lot of the nitty-gritties of how to do deals by myself. And then like any small business, trying to find time to do everything that goes into getting a transaction done, and then growing a brokerage, the typical growing pains of bringing in commissions and then having to shell those out for overhead, and those are probably some of my most vivid memories of some of the struggles I went through and really growing a team, so to say, that actually could generate some revenues.
So I've had a couple of people, right? They're like, "Hey, Steve, I'm thinking about opening a brokerage," and like before they even finish their statement, I was like, "Don't do that."
I concur with that statement.
So what were some of the pains, like maybe the people that don't know about?
There's just the revenue stream that stays with the brokerage mm-hmm. is so minimal. Even if you have your agents on 80-20 splits, I mean, that's still there's a lot of overhead that goes into that. I mean, there's just a lot of cost to have a staff and admin, and if you don't have a staff or admin that are doing it, then you're doing it yourself, which is naturally an opportunity cost away from you going out and generating revenues. So keeping agents happy, truly adding value, doing all of those things that keep agents coming, at the end of the day, when it all shakes out, the amount of revenues that really come in on the brokerage side is mm-hmm. is minimal. And then also, the headaches that you deal with as the broker, putting out fires, dealing with compliance, dealing with you know, contract related issues. There's just
compliance and complaints.
There's a lot, and it's just, man, it's a drag sometimes.
And so, like, you know, a lot of the guys that we run into in our industry, they have teams, mm-hmm. or they're doing wholesale or fixing and flipping, so they have all the same headaches.
Yep.
But with the brokerage, you have the benefit of making less money.
Yes.
For the same amount of work.
There you go.
Okay. So, you know, one of the questions we've been getting a lot recently is, you know, these guys that are getting into wholesaling, because you do wholesaling too, or do you more flipping side?
No, we wholesale as well.
Okay. So, you know, if you were to start a wholesale slash flip operation, what are the first five steps you would take in order to do that?
First five steps it'd take is, you know, be super on point with, you know, knowing how to underwrite a deal. Make sure you've got a, you know, at least understand how you can get an exit buyer at the mm-hmm. end of the day. Have a backup plan in case that exit buyer doesn't go through.
Yeah.
Know how to weather the storm if you have to, you know, eat some earnest monies here and there.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, more than anything, just be ready and prepared to act quick,
because right.
wholesale deals come in quick and go out quick.
Yeah.
So it's a high-paced business model, and it's probably what drives me to it, because I enjoy the adrenaline rush of doing deals.
Well, it's definitely quickly. More adrenaline. It's a lot more fun.
Yep.
So as far as underwriting a deal, because mm-hmm. I think of those five things, that's actually the one that's the most important,
because mm-hmm.
if you've got a deal, you can sell it.
Correct.
Right? Yeah. If you got the numbers right, you can exit it.
The deals that are true deals, yes.
So the challenge then is identifying which one's a deal and which one that you should pass on, which one's to walk away from.
Right.
So how would you teach someone, can you teach someone, you know, how to underwrite a deal, like on a, you know, 2 minutes here?
Yeah. I mean, on a 2 minute quick underwrite training sesh, you know, first things first is the way I learned it is, taken a lot of reps, mm-hmm. and I learned it in the construction industry, measure twice, cut once, mm-hmm. right? Being a framer, kind of take the same approach on the wholesale front, where, you know, when you look at a deal, relook at it and make sure that you're not, you know, missing something. And, you know, I always like to start close proximity to the property
mm-hmm.
and look in that exact neighborhood. And if there might be some other deals outside, even they fall within a half mile radius,
right?
There could be differing factors. And I think a lot of people, when they comp properties, just automatically assume, oh, well, it's in within a 5 mile radius, and they miss the little details of, oh, yeah, well, that one backs or doesn't back a street, whereas this one does,
mm-hmm.
A major street. You know, it's the little things, especially when you get into niche areas like, you know, Phoenix, Arcadia, some of those spots.
Historic in Phoenix.
There you go. I mean, it's a lot different comping a property there than it is in, you know, Southeast Valley and Mesa, Gilbert. That, you know, they all look the exact same.
Right.
And so I think that's probably one of the biggest misses that mm-hmm. I see on, you know, wholesalers just getting into the game and just blasting out these crazy numbers that, you know, you can't hardly ever trust what those numbers are.
Right.
Is, you know, they don't get surgical in their underwriting efforts.
I had someone call me on one of my pay-per-click campaigns, so that was not fun, right? Because, you know, right there, like, it's $300.
Yep.
When he calls me, that's $300.
Yep.
And he's like, yeah, I got this property and it's worth $700 easy. And I said, okay, yeah, send me the details, I'll take a look at it. If it makes sense, I'll call you back. And the $700, yeah, if you go outside the neighborhood, $700 easy, that's for sure. But mm-hmm. all those 550s in your neighborhood, why are we not counting those?
Right. Yeah, exactly. Right. Yeah. Why are we looking past all those that are right next to this property?
Yeah. So you've been in the business for a while now. What bits of wisdom would you give to the young guys?
Man, get ready for a grind.
Yeah.
Yeah. This business is not for the, not for the weak and the weary. So, you know, get ready to, you know, roll your sleeves up and jump in the trenches and grab a shovel and start digging and keep digging and, you know, get ready to be knocked down and get back up. And, you know, but he who scraps the hardest and the longest will come out on top. And that is the real estate industry in general. And even more so now with all these different companies coming in, disrupting this industry. You know, those that understand and know how to be personable, work hard, never give up, and you know, be passionate about real estate. You got to have passion, or else you won't survive in this in this industry.
And I think that's there's definitely a lot of truth to that, because I think, you know, we talk about traditional real estate, I think, is one of the most capitalistic industries there are.
Mm-hmm.
Then you get into wholesale.
Yep.
And it makes residential look like a piece of cake.
Yep.
And we're in multiple Facebook groups, you know, wholesaling houses full time is one of the big ones, and wholesaling houses elite. And I think probably once a week we get in big letters, I'm done with this. This doesn't work, or you guys sold me something, and blah, blah, blah. And boy, if you're not ready to grind and get knocked over, you're not going to make it.
It is a grind. It is a scrap fest for sure.
So, you know, we got a lot of peers, a lot of friends. We run in the same circles in this market. What would you say is different between the way you run your business and the way the other wholesalers and flippers in our market run their businesses?
You know, I like to stand out in a couple different ways. One, you know, I like to be on the front lines of technology. Mm-hmm. So, you know, one of the things that when I was writing offers for and acquiring properties for Colony was we developed a software platform, mm-hmm. which Steve Peterson, who's a longtime wholesaler,
mm-hmm. nice guy,
you know, super super good guy, and I and Lane Peterson all kind of collectively came together and, you know, built out a pretty cool MLS scraper tool, mm-hmm. an app that has been pretty unique and has been great both when we were writing for Colony and also now on the wholesale front, which allows us to be pretty on point with underwriting and very efficient with offer writing, mm-hmm. and follow-ups, etc. And then I'm a firm believer in even in the wholesale games at times, like I said, pretty scrappy, but mm-hmm. I'm a firm believer in, you know, if you treat people right and you're fair and honest with them in the here and now, you'll have residual business forever. So, you know, I try to take that approach in everything I do, and especially in the wholesale front.
Right.
Because at the end of the day, if you suck out all of the juice in the deal and whoever you sold it to doesn't make any money, then they're not coming back around to you. So,
right.
Yeah, I like to kind of take that approach on every deal, even if you might have to tighten things up on the spread and take less of a margin to move more product. I think that that's just a long-term sustainable business model and approach. Right.
Relational.
It's relational, very much relationship-based.
So one of the things I want to talk to you about is, you know, this has been this journey of all these different facets that you've gone through,
mm-hmm.
in the real estate world. So you started at Perkinson. Was it just strictly traditional?
Yeah. Yeah. When I started, originally it was called Perkinson Investment Corp. And Perkinson Investment Corp was owned by my father. My uncle is the designated broker. And in fact, little tidbit on that, one of the founders of Invitation Homes, mm-hmm. Dallas Tanner, hung his license there at Perkinson Investment Corp. And, you know, my dad kind of was his mentor, so to say. Mm-hmm. So I got to kind of see that relationship and how that worked. But again, at that point, it was very much more investment minded. And so I changed the name to Perkinson Properties, mm-hmm. and was very much focused on the traditional real estate space or segment of the real estate industry from 2000 and what would that have been, 8 to like 2011,
mm-hmm.
was primarily residential resale. And then in 2012 is when I started really focusing on, and I became the broker in 2012 and focused more on trying to build a team.
Mm-hmm.
And then from 2012 into 2013 and 14 was when I really jumped into the SFR space, single family residential, working with Invitation Homes.
Okay, so let's talk about that. So how did that relationship occur? Now, obviously, you're being friends with Danny or Dallas or knowing Dallas certainly helped.
Yeah. It definitely helped, but there was that really was not that influential in really being able to transact with him, because you know, he was off doing a lot of different things, flying all over the country, and you know, he had his in-house acquisition guys on the ground that I had to kind of work directly with and figure out a way to, you know, add value. And so
But how did mutual, you get your foot in the door so, with the hedge fund?
Yeah, so a lot of phone calls, mm-hmm. a lot of, you know, follow up. And, you know, it took about 6 months to actually get a sit down. And then a mutual friend who got picked up out of the business school as a, you know, West Coast acquisitions director, and was over the really heading up the Las Vegas mm-hmm. acquisition team. I kind of anchored next to him, and you know, kind of had written off Phoenix because they had already been really moving. And yep. So I started to try and get into the Vegas market with him, and you know, he liked the tenacity, liked how I was, you know, not relentless and you know, not taking no for an answer. And so he some things shook up in Phoenix, and even though I was going down the route of helping him acquire in Vegas, he called me and said, hey, things opened up here in Phoenix, so you got an opportunity to see if you can come in and add some value. And so at that point, that was what was that, October of 2012, mm-hmm. And I was on track to, you know, do about 50 transactions that month, and or that year, I should say.
Yeah.
And then in the month of November, you know, we stayed up all night for multiple weeks and figured mm-hmm. out a way to pull in about 50 transactions in the month of November. And from there, we just, you know, built a system, created a platform that was meaningful, and you know, that scrubbed the MLS well and identified good deals, and you know, really created a process that worked well for them at the time. And because of that, we were successful in helping them acquire.
And I think assets. That's there's something big there, right? Like, you went from on pace to doing 50 deals mm-hmm. for that year to, well, we got to do 50 deals this month.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of guys right now that are trying to build their businesses, trying to get their systems up and running. And there's the challenges of getting your business up and running. And then there's a challenge like, holy crap, we got this going on. How the heck do we manage all this?
Yeah.
So you said multiple weeks of not sleeping. Like, what were the challenges? How did you?
Well, the challenges is well, man, a lot of offers that are going out mm-hmm. and keeping track of all of those was a major challenge. And so we had to really figure out in a short period of time how to streamline processes, how to organize the workflow in a way that we could stay on top of all the offers that were going out, and then the ones that were getting accepted, how we were managing, you know, that whole process. And then once they did get accepted, you know, there was obviously an inspection period that we went through, and a lot of those we had to go back and retrade. And so what we ended up doing is we really set it up like an assembly line, and we had, you know, agents, which one of those was our good friend Jordan Nielsen, writing offers. And then we had but they wouldn't write offers until it was green lit by our underwriter. So we had original mm-hmm. underwriter, and then we had agents that were firing out offers, and then we had agents negotiating the deal, which I was primarily that agent. I had one other helper that would help me do that, but and then at that point it moved into the transaction and closing department. So we set it up like an assembly line mm-hmm. so that it was kind of very systematic and you know, streamlined. So and I that process of setting that up, I mean, I've used that, what I learned in those, you know, 8 short months throughout all the different businesses that I've kind of ventured onto since that experience, and it's taught me a lot about
systems. Well, I bet you learned a lot.
Did learn a lot.
How to drink down from a hose.
Yes. In fire, big fire hose. Yeah. It.
So then you were working with Invitation Homes, and then that eventually kind of winded mm-hmm. itself down.
Yep.
And then at that point, you went off to...
Yeah, so after I was done with Invitation Homes, ended up starting Treehouse Realty, mm-hmm. And you know, that was kind of an interesting venture that you know, learned a lot from as well. Got really heavy transitioned back into the traditional resale side of things, pretty heavy, more mm-hmm. so than I had originally anticipated. But again, learned a lot about building a brokerage and systems and automations and the power of technology in the real estate space. And, you know, grew that in, you know, about a year and a half's time. We had close to 80 agents mm-hmm. and learned that I really didn't want to be the broker of 80 agents. So kudos to you. You got 65. And, you know, there are just a lot of headaches that come along with that. And so But that was fun. That was a great experience. Did that from about 2013 through end of 2015, mm-hmm. end of 16. And yeah, had a great time.
And then from there you went to?
Yeah, so from there, I actually, one of my passions has always been commercial real estate. Mm-hmm. My father's background is, he's more in the development, land development and syndication game. And he's owned and operated a number of hotels and medical office buildings. And I've always kind of saw what he's done and never had really dove into it head first until 2016. I have a good buddy of mine who started a storage company by the name of iStorage in 2010. So from 2010 to 2016, they had grown a storage portfolio to the size of approximately 70 properties. And in 2016, beginning of 2016, I was actually down in Mexico with him racing mm-hmm. Baja trucks. And we started talking about the acquisition platform that I had for Invitation Homes, and he said, hey, you know, we're in acquisition mode. They had just done a recapitalization of their company, and so I decided to jump in and learn the commercial real estate business with mm-hmm. him, acquiring properties for him and his company, and so had a good run from end of 15 to 16 in the commercial real estate world. I started a company called Cresta Commercial Real Estate. We mm-hmm. identified self-storage properties for his group and others, and through that process was able to have firsthand experience and watching a lot of acquisitions happen, and then I was able to be a part of teeing up making some good connections that ultimately led to them selling their portfolio for close to $700 million. So it was really cool to be a part of that process, and again implement a lot of what I learned during the IH days on the acquisition front and then tailor it to the commercial real estate front.
Right. And then after all that?
So, yeah, right at the end of that sale going down, I actually got a call from a good friend of mine who also was very influential. In fact, he was the same person that was very influential in getting me in with Invitation Homes. Mm-hmm. His name's Todd Farnsworth, good friend of mine. Mm-hmm. And he had been picked up by Colony, who's based out of Scottsdale. Mm-hmm. And they had given him the task of, hey, we want to deploy meaningful capital here in Phoenix. So he called me and said, hey, we need to spin up I've been tasked to spin up a acquisition platform for them. And so I rallied some troops, brought them all together. They wanted to kind of have a multifaceted acquisition approach from MLS to off-market to new build, mm-hmm. Which they were kind of the pioneers in that build-to-rent space, which has now become a thing.
Yeah, and it is. I heard about that recently. Yeah. There's lots of people doing it.
Yeah. It is a thing, and I was able to put together one of the first build-to-rent deals in the Valley with them out in Santan Valley, which, has been overperforming. And so, that was a fun way from 16 through middle of 17. Helped them acquire about 320 assets here in Phoenix.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
And then now you're wholesaling and flipping.
Yep. Now wholesaling, flipping. We ended up doing a little stint out in Houston when Harvey hit. We felt like there was an opportunity out there, and so we went out and acquired, some 22 properties out there. Mm-hmm. Some were flood homes, others were non-flood, more of like a regentrification pocket, similar like in Arcadia, in the inner loop of Houston, and that's been a great experience. Learned some hard lessons about operating in other states and how difficult that is.
Well, give me that, because I need to be discouraged from going outside of Arizona.
Yeah, I would tell you that, if anyone had, and again, I've had desires and passions of, going and doing really big things in other markets and have mm-hmm. traveled all over and have got my broker's license in 7 different states. And mm-hmm. it sounds all great and fine and dandy, but be ready for a lot of extensive costs and, being spread super thin. Mm-hmm. And, what I learned is, the ability to manage, which is common sense, right? The ability to manage in a different state becomes very difficult.
Yeah.
And be able
when you
to
can't look them in the eye?
You can't look them in the eye and you're relying upon other guys. And I feel like I have a really good, platform there with some really good people. Mm-hmm. But even still, it's hard to hold people's feet to the fire, get them to show up. Especially in a market like Houston, where the labor force has been a challenge in general, there's a lot of construction rehabs going on for obvious reasons. So, But it was a, it's been a great experience, and we, we've learned a lot. And although the returns haven't been as good as we would have liked, we've formed some really strong partners with our relationships with our partners, and are working our way through what we have there. I'm going to probably hold on to some of those as rentals, mm-hmm. and look to exit those down the road. Some of the inventory levels have been a little higher than we would have liked, so absorption's been a little softer. But it's been a great experience.
So one of the things that as a warning to some of our newer agents, is stay focused. Do mm-hmm. one thing. Do one thing well, right?
Yes.
And then do the. It's easy to kind of get shiny object syndrome and jump on this to this to this. And what ends up happening is you fail at all these different things.
Mm-hmm.
Now you've proven that to be the exception to that rule. So what do you attribute that to? Like, why are we able to jump to so many different facets of the industry and still have high success in each realm?
Well, I still think that it goes back to what I said at the beginning,
mm-hmm.
tenacity, hard work, and never giving up. That's the only reason why I'm still in business today, is because of that. Because the reality of it is, I'm a living testament to what you were just saying. You get you're one person. You can only focus on I'm a pretty good multitasker, and I can do multiple things at once, but my highest level of effectiveness mm-hmm. has not been there because I've bounced around to a number of different things. Now, the reason why I've done that is because it's really more of an educational thing. Like, I've wanted to get, then there's no better way to learn than jumping in head first and figuring it out.
Yeah.
And so I look at it as a way, because my ultimate goal is to have a boutique residential and commercial brokerage mm-hmm. business located in the Southeast Valley that services Phoenix.
Yeah.
And because of everything that I've done over the last 5 years, I've touched five different asset classes. I have a track record in brokering, land and commercial buildings and storage and industrial and, mm-hmm. Office. I have a background in all of that now,
right.
And feel like I can add some meaningful value to all of those different asset classes.
Mm-hmm.
But to go back to answer your question, why have I been able to do it and others haven't? Is sleepless nights and putting in a lot of hours. That's all there is to it.
You're gonna figure it out.
Yes, I'm determined to figure it out.
Yeah. So as far as your wholesale flipping operation, what does that organization look like today?
So we've got a core group of about six of us that really get after it on the wholesale fix mm-hmm. and flip front. I have a director of operations named Tyler Briggs, super sharp kid. Came from Open or Offerpad before he was with us, and I have an internal call center. One caller here in Phoenix in my office, and then I have actually outsourced caller in Mexico
mm-hmm.
That generate a lot of leads on the phones. And then I've got a guy that kind of manages the leads and directs them to the different agents that work them. And I've got three agents that really hustle and work the leads that come in and go out to the buy appointments. And we feel good about what we have going on, what we've got in the pipeline, and really the team that we have in place is a bunch of guys and gals that like to hustle and like to get after it. So
you're sending licensed real estate agents on the buy appointments?
Some of them are licensed, some are not.
Okay.
So
you're saying agents, you just mean like they're just
going out there, buyers.
Okay.
Yeah, quote gotcha. Unquote buyers. So I have one buyer that's he's actually taken all of his classes to be an agent. He just hasn't passed the test, but he's really the one that goes on the majority of the buy appointments, and all the other agents really kind of help sell the deals.
Yeah. So. Okay. So that we're talking about cold callers, talking about acquisitions. You do have any disposition people?
But I haven't segmented it to where, I have people specifically focused on dispositions mm-hmm. versus acquisitions. We kind of all collectively work together as a team. I think that is something that, I see systematically speaking. Again, going back to focusing on one thing that you're good at,
mm-hmm.
I see that being something that we're going to work on in 2019, really getting it set up like that. But right now, we kind of all just work together as a team. As we get a deal tied up, we we all go out to our different networks and tap into the network that, you know, I built over the last however many years and get them sold in whatever way we can.
Okay. And then you mentioned earlier you wrote a platform to write offers
mm-hmm.
for MLS listings.
Mm-hmm.
Is that still something that you find effective to be today? To be effective today?
Yes. And just to clarify, I did not write the program. It was Steve Peterson. So,
yeah.
But yeah, I was he and I were partners at the time, and yeah, it's been we have had success using it, and it is something that it's a tool. Ultimately, mm-hmm. you got to know how to use the tool,
right.
and you got to be, super Johnny on the spot and really, really work it to mm-hmm. get out of it what it's built to do. But yes, we've had quite a bit of success with it. In fact, we're working on a deal right now that we just tied up and it's closing 29th, and we're working it right now that today, right before I came in here, that we tied up using that app. Not all of them come on MLS. We have quite a few that come off market through probate and other sources, but it is an effective tool.
Awesome.
Yeah.
And then we talked about this a little bit, but are you in any markets right now besides Phoenix? I mean, you were in Houston.
Yeah, I still am in Houston. Yeah,
we are.
Yeah, we're in Phoenix and in Houston. I'm licensed in Florida and Georgia and Nashville, or I guess Tennessee. But I'm not actively pursuing those markets right mm-hmm. now. I really want to focus on Phoenix. I'd way rather be really, really good in Phoenix than mediocre and average in a whole bunch of different markets.
Right.
My main focus in 2019 is to be here in Phoenix, and I'll probably grow out the wholesale platform in Houston since I'm there. I've got a network there, and but right now main focus is Phoenix.
Okay. All right. And are there any CRM tools or systems that you could not live without?
CRM tools or systems that I could not live without. Well, on the broker side, I got to have SkySlope
because
I previously was paper filed back 6 years ago, and it was a disaster. So
yeah. Especially with the volume you guys were doing.
Yeah, yeah. So we quickly transitioned over to SkySlope, you mm-hmm. know, or something along those lines. Dotloop, I think, is one of them that we tried that I wasn't a huge fan of. So SkySlope has been pretty great to use. Podio is what we're using currently right now for mm-hmm. our CRM platform, which that was actually the original CRM platform that we used when Jordan was with us mm-hmm. 6 years ago, and we were starting a resale team right after the IH days. He got us set up on Podio. And then we ended up jumping over to Conversion when I started Treehouse mm-hmm. Realty, which I think is now KV Core is what they call it,
mm-hmm.
Which I'm a fan of. I'm a fan of that platform as well. That was great. But I like Podio. I mean, it's got a good base. You can do a lot with it. It's been something that we have that's been very useful. And then, of course, Excel, right? You can't get away without having a bunch of Excel sheets. So, and Google Drive, which Google Docs we've used a lot. That was what my whole acquisition platform was built off of for Invitation Homes.
Right.
Was Google Docs.
Okay. So. I missed the question here. I don't know how this happened. What are your top lead sources right now?
On the wholesale?
Yeah.
Top lead sources are probably off of our call center. I mean, we have some dedicated, really good dialers mm-hmm. that kick up quite a few leads, and relationships that I've built with different probate attorneys.
Yeah.
So those are probably my two top sources for deals.
And then the cold callers, who are they calling?
They're calling off of 60-day late lists, and then also just equity lists that we've pulled through Remime. Actually, we've used that new Remime app,
mm-hmm.
And then also some list source data.
Yeah,
and we just get kind of surgical on what areas we want to focus on and dial a whole bunch of numbers.
Yeah.
So
cool. So what are you going to do if the market dips?
Lick my chops. it's part of why I'm kind of really transitioning back to get hyper focused on instead of more the owner operator side, which I've been doing the last pretty heavily the last year, bringing, my business back to the bread and butter of brokerage, because market dips, that means there's a lot of investors coming in to buy a bunch of properties, right? Or there's people that are going to need to sell their house, or there's, businesses that are going to need to, move and consolidate. And so I'm just going to be ready to find those people or businesses that need to make a move because the market's corrected, and be able to add a service that makes sense and get paid a commission because of it. So
you think the traditional side would be bigger if the market dips?
I mean, the traditional side will definitely be, I don't know on the traditional side.
Yeah.
I mean, I look at it as, I mean, yes, there will be traditional resale business. That's how I lived through. That's how I lived through the last downturn. My focus is probably will not be, my personal focuses will not be so much on that side, but the agents that I have on board with me will, be able to take advantage of that. But I think that, there'll be, I'm going to be focusing more on the investment opportunities that will come, and to be able to identify those and bring in buyers or sellers or whatever, and act as a broker in those transactions. And then obviously from being in the broker position, I'll be able to identify some deals, and in certain situations we'll be able to, take a principal role in those. So,
okay. What's your biggest struggle right now?
Biggest struggle right now? Oh man. I would say, biggest struggle is just getting things back in line and back in motion under the same system and platform, or similar system and platform that I had, back early days of Treehouse and late days of version one of Perkinson Properties, and getting all those systems really ironed out and functioning properly. I've learned a lot through all of those days, and now it's just getting all of the underlying core systems are in place, and now it's just the fine tuning process.
Yeah.
And so, being pulled in a number of different directions on getting deals done myself, and then managing other agents, and managing projects that we have going on. So right now, it's probably the hardest thing is just getting pulled in a couple different directions and trying to really find the right guys and gals in my office that are kind of owning those different things, that are pulling me in different directions, so that I can kind of focus on growing the macro business of having a boutique commercial and residential brokerage business.
Yeah.
That I can, bring in agents and source opportunities for those agents to run with. So.
Okay. And what do you consider to be your superpower?
My superpower. I'm the type of guy that can bring a lot of energy to a room and, create a lot of excitement and, recruit agents and create opportunities for those agents to take advantage of. And, so I would say that that's, those things are my forte is, on the sales and marketing and, recruiting side of things.
Yeah.
And that's what I love doing. I mean, I love taking a group of people, bringing them all together, creating synergies to accomplish something great and have everyone win. And when everyone's winning, like, makes me happy.
That's awesome.
So I'm a big believer in, creating systems and an operation to where that can reside.
Okay. I like that. What's the greatest lesson you've learned?
Greatest lesson I've learned is probably what you were talking about before. Find what I'm really good at and stay focused on that, and not get distracted with the next big thing, the grass is greener on the other side, the shiny objects that fly in front of my face.
It's not our fault it keeps coming out in front of us.
It does. And the biggest thing I've learned is how to say no.
Right.
How to say, that sounds like an unbelievable opportunity that I'm going to pass on.
Yeah.
But it's not because it's not an unbelievable opportunity, or it could be. It's that I'm staying focused on this. And
right.
I've learned that from firsthand experience by associating with our good friend Jordan Nielsen here at Lister Pros.
Yeah.
And he's been a great example to me of that. And you know, I just watching people just stay level, stay right here. And that's, you know, it goes back to the tortoise and the hare, dude.
Mm-hmm.
That whole thing is like, and I have a couple tortoises myself in my house, and it's I cannot be more true. You can turn your head and next thing you know, they're gone. And it's not because they're lightning speed. It's because they're just steady.
Right.
So, I think that's probably the biggest lesson that I've learned is be steady, be constant, and don't get distracted.
Yeah. I was coming from lunch, and I had this, I was talking to a couple of flippers. Mm-hmm. They're asking me, like, so Steve, what's your focus? Like, that's just not a good question for me. Because I've got seven different things going on the antithesis of focus. So what is your favorite, best, or most interesting failure?
Favorite, best, and most interesting failure. That's a good question because I've had a lot of failures in my day. I probably would say, you know, I guess you could classify Cresta Commercial Real Estate as a quote unquote failure because it's not in existence anymore today. But I would say that that's probably my favorite.
Yeah.
For a couple of reasons. One, I got to associate with my best childhood friend growing up, Paul Brown. He's just such a stud, and I was able to really spend a lot of quality time during those 2 years traveling. He had an office out in California on the beach, Solano Beach, and I literally have a mobile office over there.
Office on the beach.
On the beach. Like, literally, you sit here, look out the window, see the beach. It was
nice.
It was phenomenal. And so I was traveling back and forth, doing a lot with him, spending a lot of time out there with him, learning from him and his partner, Zach Linford, who's a wizard, like an absolute data wizard, and got to kind of see the inner workings of iStorage and how that worked. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that was a tremendous learning experience for me.
Yeah.
And again, although Cresta in and of itself isn't in existence, the things I learned during that 2 year stint, being able to be involved in a large, you know, watching a large transaction happen in front of my face, and then be able to take those things and then apply it to the residential, the SFR space right after that. That's probably been one of my, what was it? Favorite failures.
Failure.
There you go.
Yeah.
Favorite failures that I learned the most from.
Yeah, and I can't imagine too many people in our space have done a $700 million transaction.
Yeah, well, and again, it was, I wouldn't say that I was the one who championed the whole thing.
But you didn't champion it.
I did tee up the initial phone call, which that's my role as a broker. I know my role as a broker, right?
Yeah.
That is the role of a broker. Then that's the other thing I learned.
Yeah.
Know your place.
Yeah.
In the broker world. If you're a broker, that's what you are. You're a broker. You make the introductions, and you let the other guys do the work.
Right.
So.
What book have you gifted more than any other?
What book have I gifted? Man, if I were a reader, I would have a lot bigger wealth of books, which I need to. That's one of the things I really want to do more of in 2019 is read. But I would say, and this is one that my father, who's always pounding the streets on, is the good old Greatest Salesman in the World by, what's his name? Yoshida, I don't even know the author's name.
D'Agostino,
there you go.
Yeah.
But that's probably been the book that I have referred out to my agents the most.
Yeah.
Being in a sales business, the thing that I really liked about that book and that I put into practice is really understanding and knowing, you know, the process of sales, but also understanding and knowing how to go from what does he refer to it as in the book, where you are the engineer mind to more of like the bigger picture mind.
Yeah.
And you got to understand and know your trade, but then you also have to be able to like take a step back and understand and know how the bigger picture of the business works. And so that's probably my the book that I've gifted the most.
I'm going to pick that up. What keeps you up at night?
Debt.
Yeah.
Debt keeps me up at night. Not a huge fan of debt, hard money debt.
Yeah.
Too much of it keeps me up at night.
So you're talking about like when you're going through a flip.
Yeah. Yeah, when you're going through a flip and you got a big hard money loan on it that you're paying 10 or 12% interest on, and the clock's ticking and things are taking longer and you got big hefty interest payments going out every month, that keeps me up at night. So that's actually one of the few things that has kept me up at night. I am a rock of a sleeper, but stack a bunch of debt on me and I'll keep, you know, keep me up.
So does that stop you or prevent you from doing, like, you know, those major deals? I mean, you said you're doing one.
No,
with
I'm doing, I'm doing one with basic countback right now in a neighborhood called Echo Canyon, literally right at the base of the trailhead. It's a big flip, and I got a big, I'm in the process of refining out some hard money and getting it down to more like 5.5% money, which will be a little easier, but it's still, you know, $1 million in debt on the deal. So
yeah, so I mean, 12%, I mean, that's not big deal. I mean, that's only like $100,000 a month.
Exactly, right? Some ridiculous amount every month. My payment currently on it, that one's like $6,700 a month. So it's close to $80,000 a year. So
that's not too bad.
That's chump change, right? For you, maybe. For you.
Okay, cool. So I think that's a great place to end this. So what if someone has some questions for you on, you know, whether the Crest or the brokerage or whatever, what's the best way for someone to get a hold of you?
Probably to shoot me a text. I'm pretty easy on text, or you can instant message me on Facebook as well. But text message to my cell phone, 480-247-0907. Or you could instant message me. Danny Perkinson is pretty, that's me on Facebook. So look me up on Facebook.
And, yeah, the red beard.
Yeah, the guy with the red beard, which red beard didn't used to be there, and my kids told me to never shave it again because I look ridiculous. So we'll see if I ever get rid of the red beard.
Okay, cool. And again, guys, if you like the show, please share this episode right now. And next week we have Ron Rana from Houston, and he's going to be talking about how he went from just doing regular car sales to becoming the top wholesaler in Houston. And don't forget, guys, to check out realestatedisruptors.com to find out about our upcoming events and watch all of our previous episodes. And with that, thank you guys for listening. And thank you. This
was awesome. Thanks for having me.